I'm Robin Lustig, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. From the Iliad to the Aeneid, from Tolstoy to Hemingway and Heller, writers have written of war. So sometimes have soldiers. And now the National Endowment for the Arts wants to encourage veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq to write about the wars in which they fought. The story of a nation, it says, is in part the story of its wars. And who can deny that America's story in the early years of this century is inevitably a story of wars? And who better to tell that story than the men and the women who fought those wars, who were there, who can tell it as it really was? So, some of the nation's most established writers are holding classes on military bases, helping soldiers to move beyond the dry military prose of field reports, teaching them how to tell us what it felt like, looked like, smelt like in the mountains of Afghanistan or the deserts of Iraq. Where do you place the first-person memoir among the many kinds of writing about war? Do you hold a soldier's account to a higher standard of truth? Or does its very subjectivity make it one version of events, not the official record? We'd like to hear your thoughts. Join us. Call us on 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined now from Lexington, Kentucky, by Bobby Ann Mason, writer-in-residence at the University of Kentucky, author of the novel In Country, and one of the instructors for Operation Homecoming. Also joining us, Andrew Exum, who fought both in Afghanistan and in Iraq. He left the army in May of this year with the rank of captain. He's the author of a book, This Man's Army, a soldier's story on the front lines of the war on terrorism. Thank you both for joining us on the show this hour. Andrew, let me start with you. When you heard about this programme that the National Endowment has set up, what did you think of it?
Well, I was mainly really jealous. I had I'd studied Miss Mason in college, and after reading Shiloh, I thought to myself, man, I should have waited a little longer if I knew I was going to get free creative writing instruction from the likes of Bobby Ann Mason. I think it's a good idea. I think that, this whole summer as I've been on a book tour for my book, I've been kind of preaching the gospel of first-person narratives, why they're important coming out of a combat zone, you know, why they're important, what they offer that a historian's perspective or a reporter's perspective doesn't offer.
Well, take us through that. What does it offer? Yeah. Because it is just one man's experience, one man's view, or one woman's view.
No, you're exactly right. That's kind of why my book's titled This Man's Army, not Every Man's Army. But I think they do two things. You know, first off, they keep historians honest. Up in Boston where y'all are, there's a great historian at Massachusetts Institute of Technology named John Dower who won the Pulitzer for Embracing Defeat, but he also wrote this book about combat in the Pacific during World War II entitled I forget what it's called. It was basically War Without Mercy. That was what it was called. Uh-huh. And his basic thesis is that the reason is that, first off, combat in the Pacific was much nastier than combat in, say, Western Europe. And he said the reason that it was basically because there was this racial hatred that was underneath it all between these American soldiers and Australian soldiers and the Japanese. You know, they look differently and they look different from one another. And so they're much nastier. The problem is, if you read a lot of the first-person narratives that come out of the Pacific, best probably being E.B. Sledge's With the Old Breed, or you know, if you read even some of the novels written by guys who are actually over there fighting, like James Jones, The Thin Red Line, you don't really see any of that. And so, you know, to that degree, you have to really question the validity of a guy like Dower and his thesis.
So you came back, did you, from the front line, and you said to yourself, I am going to tell them how it really was.
Well, yeah, you know, I had this sneaking suspicion that, you know, 30, 40, 50 years from now, somebody would write this great, you know, treatise on the Afghanistan war and might say something, you know, outrageous. And it definitely made me feel better that, you know, someone might be able to hold up my book and say, wait a minute, no, I just read Exum's book and that wasn't how... what he experienced. So.
Okay, let me bring Bobby Ann Mason in here. Bobby Ann, you got a call, I imagine, at some point from the National Endowment for the Arts, and they said, we'd like you to go out and teach soldiers how to write. What did you think?
Well, I was very excited about this possibility. I think it's very important for the soldiers to tell the story, to help document the history, and it's they're the only ones who can really tell us. And one thing I immediately saw that we should try to do is encourage them to tell their stories and to set down their memories while they're fresh, before they forget them. We've been seeing a lot of World War II veterans come forth with their stories now, and it's almost as if the American people weren't curious until 50 years had passed.
You'd written about the effect that war can have on a family, the effect that war has on people touched both directly and indirectly by it. You find yourself teaching a class full of people who have experienced it directly, personally.
Well,
how was that relationship?
Well, to go back to the writing of In Country, the novel, I felt very inadequate to the task at the time until I made a breakthrough. I had not been to Vietnam, but I had a character named Sam who was wondering what it was like. Her father died there. Her uncle wouldn't tell her much. He said, "You don't want to know." And she says, she has a great imagination, and she says, "Well, if you don't tell me, I'll just imagine it that it was worse than it was." And he said, "No, you couldn't do that." So the writer's imagination palls beside the actual experience. And what I discovered in the process of writing it was going to the Vietnam Memorial and realizing that my characters would go there too. And when I was there, I found my own name on the wall. Hmm. It was a man's name, Bobby G. Mason. And I found that there are four other Bobby Masons on that wall. So I felt that it was every American story. It was almost as if all our names were bound up there together. And that gave me the right to tell the story from the home front. And while I was researching it, I've read so many oral histories and memoirs by the Vietnam vets, and the voices were so eloquent. The experience they had was so profound, and the common threads, the common bond they shared was very profound, and the sense memories, their feeling about the landscape, the language they shared. So I wondered if the current returning GIs had those experiences.
Mm. But does the fact that there is this canon now of Vietnam War literature perhaps indicate that we don't need classes, we don't need to tell people what to write? If they have it within them, if they want to do it, they will do it.
I think the program may have been motivated by a desire to encourage them. Mm. You know, the Vietnam vets maybe were not encouraged, and this would have both a therapeutic and a literary effect. Maybe there's some great writer in there who needs the encouragement.
Andrew, let me just get Andrew's take on this. I mean, do you think that it is encouragement, it's a way of saying to people, more of you can do it than you might imagine, rather than teaching them how to do it? Is that what you would like this to be about?
Yeah, no, I think that unless you enroll these soldiers in a long-term, creative writing program, it's not going to be really teaching them. It's really just, it's going to be, like you said, it's going to be encouragement. I think that's a good thing. On the other hand, I've never taken a single creative writing class. I'd read a lot, and an editor approached me and asked me if I'd ever thought about writing about my experiences. And so, I don't think it's necessary. I think you're right, when you say that there are some guys out there that just, are going to have a story to tell, and they're just going to tell it, and they don't need to, they don't need to have had any formal instruction to do so with a good
editor. That's right.
Yeah, Bobby Ann.
Yeah.
The workshop was only 2 hours, and it was just a bare introduction. It was more a connection.
You don't stand there in front of the class and say, okay, if you're going to write a book, you first of all have to learn the rules of grammar.
No. You say, I went to Camp Lejeune, and I say, this has nothing to do with Marine discipline. It's just the opposite. You have to let your imagination go.
Yeah, Andrew? Yeah, I'm not so sure. I think that sometimes a soldier discipline does help, because for me, when I wrote this, you know, when I sat down to write my book, I had, you know, I'd really only written, you know, small papers for college, or, you know, and I'd had some experience in journalism and had written some small pieces. But it took a soldier's discipline to sit down every day and write 1,000 words, rain or shine.
Sure, but the other bit of the discipline argument, Bobby Ann, I mean, I'm interested in what
I
you
need
say.
It. I need some of that. Yes.
Well, you need to train as a Marine, maybe.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But Bobby Ann, I mean, you talk about the opposite of discipline. I mean, do you mean by that you have to say to people, forget what you were told about just obeying orders, remembering the rules, getting on and doing the job? You have to start digging into yourself. You have to start asking difficult questions. You have to start feeling difficult feelings.
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. I'm sure some soldiers' discipline would help get the thing done, but to get at some of those things that are buried. I always think of writing as a battle with writer's block, and an attempt to get at the things that are buried inside you, the things, trying to find some access to things that you know but you didn't know you knew.
Because the instinct for many people who sit down and try to write an account of what happened would be to do pretty much first this happened, then that happened, then that happened, then that happened, and then I went home. Now, that's not what you would like them to do, is it?
You know, the main thing we stressed was just to write down some notes and memories, some details. We couldn't go in 2 hours far enough to learn about how to discover a novel in the material or how to structure a memoir.
So what's the seed that you plant then? In those 2 hours, what do you throw into the pool? Yeah.
I think at the end we said it became a litany. Journals, keep journals and write down details. Journals and details. And my companion writer in the workshop, Erin McGraw, said, journals and details, if you can do that, then we've done our job. And that's what we wanted to encourage, because just writing down the textures, the details, the daily things of every, the routines, this is the stuff that will be the textures and will help you build your story and get at your story later on. I know that, once I was in Europe with a companion, and while we were there, her mother died. We were in Italy, and it was a terrible experience, and about 20 years later, I wanted to write a story of that, but all I had was the emotion. I had forgotten what the exchange rate was, what the trees were, what the streets were, what the popular songs were. I didn't have the immediate textures, and so we're encouraging them to start there.
We're talking about...
Because it will take you further.
We're talking about war. We're talking about discontent. We're talking about writing about war in the first person. The War Memoir is our subject this hour, and the National Endowment for the Arts new program that's aimed at inspiring America's soldiers to get down their experiences on paper. Join us when we return. 1-800-423-8255 is the number. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Robin Lustig. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection. We're discussing this hour the value of having the men and the women who fight our wars also be able to write about them when they come home. Our guests this hour, Bobby Ann Mason, author and instructor for the NEA's Operation Homecoming program, Andrew Exum, author of This Man's War. And on the phone now, joining us from Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, Lieutenant Colonel Joel Berry, who served in Iraq last year as a logistician for Task Force Tarawa with the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force, and he attended an Operation Homecoming workshop just last month. Lieutenant Colonel Berry, how was that workshop?
I actually enjoyed it very much. When I first heard about it, my wife told me about it. I wasn't sure what it was really all about. She's a journalist herself, and I initially went in support of her, and I wasn't really sure whether or not I would choose to write anything myself. But I was taken by a couple of things at the workshop itself. Professor Andrew Hudgens was the facilitator of our group,
mm-hmm.
and he pointed out a number of things that I thought were very interesting. The first thing he made clear to us is that there is an interest in by the American public to hear about stories as told by the people who took part in the military operations. And I thought that I was a little bit surprised by that. I wasn't really sure that was the case. I was reflecting as I was listening on the first part of the segment that both my father and my father-in-law served in Vietnam, and both of them have taken plenty of opportunities to talk to me one-on-one and tell stories about their experiences. And there's certainly a military-to-military interest, but it never occurred to me that there was such a similar interest on the part of the general public.
Did they write any of it down, your father and your father-in-law?
No, they didn't. Well, I tell you what, I can speak for my father. I don't mm-hmm. know that he did. My my father-in-law is a professor, and he's written several books on different topics. He may have, but...
Okay, so how about you then, Joel? Are you going to write it down?
I wasn't sure about it when I attended the writer's workshop, but I think that I may very well do that, if for no other reason than for posterity, to have something for my family in later years to be able to refer back to.
And when you write it down, what will you want us to get from the account that you provide? I mean, will it be more than a dry day-to-day accounting of what you did?
I certainly hope it will be. I think I would like to write about the people and what they did and what they accomplished.
Your colleagues?
My colleagues, for sure. I think that they were I was just taken by a number of things as we went off to Operation Iraqi Freedom, just how well galvanized everyone became about a single purpose. When you're back here at Camp Lejeune or other places operating in a garrison environment, there are a lot of things that go on day to day that are not exactly about accomplishing a military mission. A lot of distractions, you might even say.
Yeah, Bob, let me just stop you for a second to see what Bobby Ann might wish to contribute here. I don't want you to give him a free workshop over the air exactly, Bobby Ann, but I mean, here you have a man. He served as a logistician in Iraq. What would you like him to write? What would you like to be able to read of his story?
Well, I think Andrew Hudgens was really right in saying that Americans want to know what it's like. And any direction you approach it from is going to be of interest because these stories are inherently powerful. They're powerful on their own, but shaping them into a story so that we can really and truly imagine it rather than you just telling us is the difference between writing a chronicle and a more literary work. Mm.
Joel, is that what you want to do?
Well, I think I would like to write about the individual accomplishments. I was reflecting on what I heard at the workshop, and I heard some more today about keeping a journal to get started. I don't have such a journal, but it dawned on me within the last couple of days that after the war, my part in the war, I've had the opportunity, the privilege actually, to write a number of commendations on folks who worked for me, and to write evaluations on their performance. And that's a start. That will get me through to the what happened part of it. And then what I would hope to add would be some of the stuff that Andrew Hudgens reminded us of, to bring out the emotion in the senses. And I'll have to draw on my own experience to bring some of that out. But if I combine those two, what I'd like to talk about is just the absolute professional, well-trained force that went over there, and how we seemed to shed a lot of the administrative distractions, and we were just all galvanized toward a common purpose. That was what I was taken with.
Andrew Exum, you've been there and you've written about it. What would you say to Joel at this point?
Well, I think that that don't feel bad about not taking a journal, sir, because I didn't myself. I probably did all the things you're not supposed to do as a writer. When I got back, though, one of the things that helped me was I talked to if you read, I completely understand where you talk about wanting to tell your guys' stories, talk about their individual accomplishments. There's this sense that when I got back, especially when I wrote this book when we were getting ready to go to Iraq, I thought that Afghanistan had kind of been forgotten, and I wanted to really tell my soldiers' stories. What they did in Afghanistan, I wanted that to be preserved. And, the one thing I'd say is that, just write down your perspective. And then as you're doing so, talk to the guys you're over there with, sir, because that really helped me. And as a matter of fact, when I got done with the book, I gave copies out to the guys in my old platoon and some of the guys I served with. And one of the guys who was a lieutenant with me in Afghanistan, he said, what you wrote was pretty much what I remembered. And that was the best compliment I possibly could have gotten, that at least, what I'd written had been something had been true.
So there you are, Joel. You can go for it. Good luck with the book if it comes. Lieutenant Colonel Joel Berry was speaking to us from Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Let's take a call. Robert's on the line from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Robert, what do you think about this idea?
I think it's pretty amazing. I'm more concerned about why it is that we haven't heard more of it. I was just listening to NPR, and I heard that the program was coming up, and this thought struck me. I've not heard anything about it. And I think the last caller also mentioned that the only reason he knew about it was because his wife was a journalist.
Yeah.
I had no idea about it, but it's something that interests me quite a bit. And there was a program on NPR, I guess about a month ago, and we're talking about Hemingway and some of those other writers that were in war. And the thought struck me, there are lots of really great stories that lots of people have to tell, but I think it's very difficult to get into the publishing business unless there is a route that is presented to people. How many struggling writers are there today that don't necessarily have stories to tell immediately, and they have a very difficult way to find publishers or get through or even someone to help them with their stories.
You've been a military man yourself, have you?
Yes, I'm actually still an active duty military officer.
You are? Okay. And are you tempted to write about it?
Well, I've even gone further than that. Some of it is because you want to preserve stories for your children, but also because I've just had so many different stories. And a lot of them don't necessarily involve the combat, because I'm a special forces officer, but I was in the first Gulf War, I was in Haiti, I was in Bosnia, I was in Kosovo, I was in the second Gulf War, and 100 little other operations in between. And the different perspective that we have as special forces officers is that we don't end up in large military bases where we conduct all of our operations. I mean, the first Gulf War, I lived in the desert, and I, had all of my meals with them, and we live in the communities. And so we have a unique opportunity oftentimes to experience firsthand the cultures of the people that were there to help. And so those stories often are the ones that are most interesting or most funny in my book. Having eaten with Arabs sitting on a carpet and making little rice balls with your hand and having them laugh at you because you just can't do it. It's not what you do. But then, turning the tables on them and making them sit down at a big meal full of tea rats and having them use utensils and just playing with them. Those kinds of little stories about the interaction before and after, those punctuations, which are war, a lot of times I think are very interesting as well.
Bobby Ann, it sounds to me as if a man like Robert has got a lot of stories. I mean, certainly I'd like to read
them. This is exactly what we want to know, just all those things. I feel out of place here because I had never been close to a military base before in my life, before I went to Camp Lejeune last month. I kept seeing Marines and soldiers at the airports and on the way, and that was very affecting to me. And as I got closer, I realized I didn't know anybody in the military.
That's interesting because, one has this perception that there is quite a large gap that divides the world of the writer, quote unquote, and the world of the soldier, quote unquote.
Yes, and that was one thing the NEA had in mind, to bring these two worlds together and to bridge that gap with some kind of connection or conversation. And so when I wrote In Country, I didn't know anybody in the Vietnam War. And my only real connection was seeing a bunch of soldiers get on the bus at Fort Campbell. And they had their duffel bags with them, and they said they were shipping out to Vietnam the next day. And that affected me profoundly because it was my first real brush with what was about to happen and what was happening. And I put that in the novel. And I felt that way again when I saw soldiers at the airport. And then I met one of the soldiers, at Camp Lejeune, I met one of the Marines in the workshop who told me it was amazing how many Americans didn't know anybody in the military. Mm. And he said he felt responsible for being a contact for somebody. And I, there I was.
Let me just go back to Robert for a second. I mean, here you are, Robert, a man who has had many extraordinary experiences, quite separate from what the vast majority of us have done or seen. Do you think it is important that somebody who has done and seen and felt what you have should write it down, leave it for succeeding generations, give the rest of us an opportunity to get a glimpse of that world which you live in?
Well, I think it might be a little presumptuous on my part to assume that anybody would be particularly interested in my stories outside of my immediate family. To some extent, I feel I have a responsibility to write down a lot of the things that I have done just so that later on, when my kids want to know what it is that I have done, then there is a history of those things. But, I have done so many wonderful, extraordinary things that at some point I felt like I needed to start writing them down because I was starting to forget them all. And I would run into a buddy and he would say something like, oh, do you remember when you did that? And I thought, oh, wow, I did. I had forgotten about that. And it really is an extraordinary story and I need to write it down. So I'm not sure I'm thinking about anybody else. Obviously, it would be nice. And I tell these stories to people and they love them and they always want to hear more. But it would be presumptuous on my part to assume that anybody else really wanted to hear them.
I'm not so sure about that. But anyway, thank you, Robert, for the call. Sam is on the line from Louisville, Kentucky. Sam, what do you think?
I'm recalling how difficult it was for me to write letters home from Vietnam in 1965. I could not explain to my family what I had done during the day and what I had experienced and saw. I had to talk about the weather. I talked about the bugs and the ants that bit into me. I talked about the poor food that we had in 1965. It was rice. That's all we had was rice and Spam. But I couldn't talk about anything else. I just had to say...
Sam, why couldn't you?
Well, I can't understand, and this is a different point of view than what you folks are taking. I can't understand how anybody could possibly benefit by me writing a letter about atrocities, about discovering my buddy with his genitals cut off, by shooting babies who had hand grenades tied to them. And I actually had to do that because little five-year-old beautiful, beautiful Oriental babies had hand grenades tied to them, and they would send them into our groups and blow us up. And why would in the world I spent 39 years trying to forget that, and now you're asking me to bring it up and write about it? You sound sadistic in a way. I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but in a way, anybody that wants to hear about that sounds sadistic to me because it's not anything that I would like to share with anybody, to be honest with you.
Sam, you raise a very important point, and I thank you for that. Andrew, it is something which occurred to me as I was thinking about this program. In fact, a lot of what soldiers see and feel is dreadful, is horrible.
Yeah.
Sam has just expressed that. We're now asking them, the National Endowment for the Arts, among others, is asking them to relive that, to open that all up, to share it.
Right. Yeah, it's. I mean, you hear some of the, you hear some of the stories, I went to Afghanistan twice and Iraq once, and I've got nothing to compare to that, compared to that gentleman. I didn't see any of those type atrocities. I think that what it comes down to is that I think that especially, we talked about this divide between the military and the rest of society. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that, don't even know a single soldier. And I think that, one of the things that I've seen over the past couple of years is, we've come in, you know, in the run-up to the war in Iraq, is a lot of people that have never served in the military tend to get a very romantic conception of war. And that's not to say that you know, it's all pessimistic or it's all, you know, it's all atrocities. But the point is that the reason soldier stories need to be told is because the majority of people will never go through war. And if there is always that temptation to view war as this, you know, as a totally courageous or totally, you know, romantic thing. And that's why, you know, stories like that gentleman, you know, those need to be told so that when the public makes the decision to go to war, they understand what they're getting into. They understand what they're going to be sending their young men and women off to do.
But Bobby Ann, there will be people, won't there, soldiers who may come up to you or to somebody like you and say, I can't do what you're asking me to do. It hurts too much.
We did not try to probe anybody's painful memories. That's for them to deal with as they will eventually. There were some interesting things, though, that came out of this. One was talking to the spouses. Many of the spouses were there. And the kind of structure they have to create in order to live with their uncertainty. And the difficulties they have in communicating with their husbands who are off at war, they learn not to report bad things that are going on at home because they don't want to stress their husbands. And then the husbands, on the other hand, do the same. And one spouse I met said that... She says, I don't ask, and he doesn't tell.
We're going to take a break at this point. We're talking about turning soldiers into scribes, Operation Homecoming, writing the wartime experience. Join us when we return. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Robin Lustig. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection. My guests this hour are the author and former Army Captain Andrew Exum and the writer Bobby Ann Mason. We're talking about the NEA's new Operation Homecoming program, which encourages soldiers to write about their wartime experiences. Claire's on the line from Birmingham in Alabama. Claire, do you think it's a good idea?
Oh, yes, certainly. Robin, I have the unusual experience of having grown up as a daughter of the fortress of our armed services. My father is a two-war veteran. He flew Hueys in Vietnam, and during the first Gulf War, he was a battalion aviation maintenance officer of the 101st Airborne for their Chinook fleet. At present, I'm a PhD student at the University of Alabama, and one of my specialties is literature of war.
And have you tried to encourage your dad to write about his experiences?
Ironically, I have to say probably part of the reason that I got into this field is because my father would never speak about Vietnam. And yet for me, during the first Gulf War, the experience of his deployment, I was a 14-year-old girl, and he came home one day at 11:30 at night with his hair shaved, and he pulled his war bags out and started packing, and he said, I'm leaving in an hour. And then he was gone for a year. So that experience was so intimate, that war experience, and for me, being a young girl, a family member, I experienced the home front side of that. And yet he would never speak about his experiences in Vietnam. When I finally went to graduate school and started working on my PhD, I was really fortunate enough to have a professor who specializes in literature of the Vietnam War, Philip Beidler, and he was courageous enough to teach a graduate seminar on writing war. And that was the first time after that class, after taking that class and reading amazing stories like Bobby and Mason's book In Country, which we read then. We read a great deal of poetry about Vietnam. For the first time during that seminar, I went to my parents' house. My father right now is a pilot down at Fort Rucker, and I went to their house, and for the first time my father spoke about Vietnam with me. And I have to say, more than anything, the greatest importance of these experiences, obviously myself, I know that what the price of freedom, the price that our soldiers pay to ensure our freedom, it's so imperative that the remainder of this country's citizens have the ability to access and understand the legacy, the joy that comes from being able to serve, but also the difficult price that must be paid in order for us to do that.
Claire, thanks very much for the call. Bobby Ann, there are many different ways of writing about war, many different kinds of people who can and do write about war. The first-person memoir, The Soldier's Tale, where does that fit into the whole collection of writing about war?
Oh, I have no idea how to answer that.
Is it more important than other kinds of writing? Is it more important than a historian's account?
It's a different avenue into history.
You see, what I'm getting at is that it can only be, as Andrew has already acknowledged, one person's account. Nobody in war sees the whole of that war. They see one tiny slice of it.
One thing I was thinking a lot about when I went to Camp Lejeune was my father-in-law, Barney Rawlings. He was a World War II B-17 pilot, and he had died the week before. And I told his story to the Marines as a little tribute to him, and also to tell them how he, something that I thought would inspire them. He was shot down in Belgium after only 7 missions, and he made his way through the French underground to freedom. And it was quite a heroic story in the family. But then he always felt a failure. Decades later, like four decades later, the Belgians wrote to him and wanted him to come and visit. They took him to the place where the plane was shot down. And he was so moved that he started to cry. The Belgians were then embarrassed that they had not honored the crew. They all remembered the day the plane came out of the sky. And they got together and erected a memorial to this crew. And it was a huge celebration. And all the surviving crew members came. My father-in-law was very moved. He still didn't think his mission saved the village or contributed very much, but he was able to work out his memories and realize that they were symbolically honoring the American effort in World War II. Mm. And so, thinking all that, he was able to write his story as a book called Off We Went Into the Wild Blue Yonder. And so it's for the family, and I think we'll contribute it to the National Archive. I think the NEA, or not the NEA, there is an archive being assembled of memories like this.
And I guess that kind of story probably resonates quite directly with the people you were talking to at Camp Lejeune.
Yes, it did. And there were people there besides Marines. There were people who worked at the base and a lot of the spouses who connected very much with it. And I guess I wanted to tell that it was important to write the story. It was only one man's story, but in his case, it really was, it was hooked into the larger thing.
Right. Right. Let's take another call. Karen is on the line from Jamesville, Iowa.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, and thanks for taking the call, that
sure.
My son's currently in Afghanistan. He left there, he left to go there in May. And we are not told much about what they're doing, but I sent him with a journal hoping that he would write down his experiences, because I don't think that they go, especially if they're National Guard, or my son was pulled out of college to be deployed, and I don't think that even they realized what they were getting into at the time. And I don't know if he's utilizing the journal, but already I feel as if they're forgotten. We had 2 soldiers killed, an interpreter killed just 3 or 4 days ago out of his camp. And although they weren't from our state, it so hits home. And he had spoken with one of them right before they left. Now it's a different game for him. It's a different thing entirely than what it was.
When he comes home, Karen, will you want him, will you encourage him to write about his experiences there?
Absolutely. I'll encourage him to write about it. I'll encourage him to talk about it. I don't think that saying that the idea of war is romanticized is at all wrong. I think that, until you're a part of it or until you have someone there, you can even begin to realize the scope of how it affects everyone's lives involved. Yes, you don't tell your son or your serviceman or your husband what's going on at home that might not be pleasant. And I don't send newspapers that tell of things going on. I send sports magazines and things of that nature so they can get a taste of home. But when he comes home, I want him to share everything that he's experiencing. Absolutely. I think that the more knowledge we get, hopefully the more conscious we'll be about exactly what we do when we engage in war, exactly how it affects not just our soldiers but the individuals there. We're removed from it here in so many ways.
Karen,
we have no idea what it's like to be a family over there and fear in our lives every day.
Okay, Karen, thank you for that. Andrew, I was just wondering, when he comes back, Karen's son, is he going to find it difficult to write it all down?
Yeah, I think first off, you might find it really difficult to talk about it when he first comes back. And I think there is that disconnect. You know, you don't really know what's going on in Afghanistan. You know, one of the great blessings for me is my last two times that I deployed to combat was with a special operations unit, and I could always just say, hey, I can't talk about it, it's classified. But the first time I was in Afghanistan, I had a reporter with me for one particular mission in which I ended up killing this Al-Qaeda fighter. And everybody back home read about, you know, Lieutenant Andrew Exum from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and how he'd killed this Al-Qaeda fighter.
But he read the reporter's account, not yours.
Right. But nonetheless, you know, when I got back, you know, one of the big differences between, say, my grandfather going off to fight in the Pacific, my uncle in Vietnam, is that nobody knew what they did. When I came home, everybody knew, you know, at least that piece, and they all wanted me to talk about it. And it was something I wasn't prepared to talk about at the time. So it was only after I'd been back a while and really, you know, I ended up breaking my leg at the beginning of, I guess in January of 2003, and I was in, you know, bedridden for a while, and that's when I really was able to start writing about it. I really wasn't prepared to talk about it right after I got home. So I just say that, you know, soldiers need some time to process, you know, what they've been through. I think that, you know, journals are great because you can write in a journal and you can put it away for 8, 9, 10 years, and then you can pick it back up, and then maybe you're ready to talk about it again.
I just wanted to ask you about your experience of working with a reporter, because in Iraq in this last war we had this experience of embedded correspondence,
right,
living,
right,
working, traveling, sleeping,
yeah,
fearing with the soldiers. They wrote accounts on a daily basis, some of them.
Yeah.
From what you've seen, did they get it right?
Well, I think that, you know, first off, you know, you take a writer like, you know, I guess Rick Atkinson at the, you know, the Washington Post, or, you know, David Zucchino at the LA Times, and you know, the one thing they've got in common is that they're both better writers than Andrew Exum is, you know. So I think that in many ways their narratives are good, but I always say that, you know, reporters and reporters' accounts, reporters are kind of like kids that walk in, you know, halfway through a movie and then leave before the end. And there's another way in which first-person soldiers' narratives are good, because soldiers see not only just the combat, but they see the units coming together. They see all that, you know, they know what the training's like, which the public also has curiosity about. And like I kind of hinted upon, one of the most difficult things about combat is something that the reporters rarely cover, which is coming home. That's, you know, that's kind of like the, I mean, that's kind of the last battle. And that's something that you rarely see in reporters' narratives. And, you know, it's something that I really, that was one of the things I wanted to communicate most in my book.
And Bobby Ann, there will, I imagine, be some soldiers, at least, whom you will encounter, who will say, yeah, I have a story to tell, but there are other people who can tell it better than I can.
We found that some of the Marines were desperate to tell a story, to get the record straight, or because of some... the way it had been reported, or or they felt that they were constrained. They couldn't really tell because there was classified information, but yet it was difficult. And about coming home, one of the Operation Homecoming, I think, was conceived to be a way of helping the GI make a transition from the war experience to home. But what has occurred is that many of them they came home, but they're turning around and going back.
Yeah.
So
there's no time.
No, and that I think that felt a little strange to be talking to people who are going to go back again.
But Andrew, I guess the process of writing for those who do try it is one way of bridging that gap that we were talking about, both the gap between those who serve and those who don't, but also the gap between those who do and those who write.
Well, I think that, you're exactly right. First off, I wrote this book not so much for other soldiers. There are 300,000 people in the United States Army right now that have experiences that are probably better than mine. You know, I didn't write this for them, but I did write it for, the people that never would go through those experiences. And so it is about bridging that gap between those who've served and those who haven't. It's also, like you said, it's about, bridging the gap between those who've served and then those who serve and then write about it. This book, I dedicated it to my platoon in the 10th Mountain Division, the guys I led in Iraq who are now, in Afghanistan, the guys I led in Afghanistan who are now in Iraq for a year. And I wanted to tell their stories because, especially when I wrote this book, which was in the run-up to the Iraq War, like I said, I felt that their contributions had really been forgotten, and I wanted to preserve their contributions on paper.
Thank you to both my guests this hour. Bobby Ann Mason, the author of several books of fiction, including In Country. She's an instructor for the NEA's Operation Homecoming Writing Workshops, and she's writer-in-residence at the University of Kentucky. Andrew Exum fought with the Army in Iraq and in Afghanistan. He is the author of This Man's Army, a soldier's story on the front lines of the war on terrorism. Earlier this hour, we also spoke with Lieutenant Colonel Joel Berry, who's a logistician for the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. The Connection is produced by Nancy Cohen, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Kelly Jones, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Jen Matson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts. Tari Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Robin Lustig in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.